Greetings and welcome to The Dividing Line. It is a Tuesday. Yeah, Tuesday afternoon, 17th of November. Greetings and welcome. The camera is all bumped and changed and moved so that we can make room for, we have in-studio guests constantly. Well, okay, a couple times a year. And today we have a gentleman who is a very patient gentleman. He's patient because he's put up with me. How long did I stay with you? How it was about, what, 5 days?
About an eternity.
About an eternity at his house. And so,
I know what you're talking about there, brother.
So
yep.
Later in the program, we will be talking about pig sacrifice.
Bird offerings.
And bird offerings at the Ramos home.
And zombie apocalypse too.
Yes. But Emilio Ramos from Texas. Now, I forgot to ask you, how much can we tell people about why you're here?
Very little, actually. We're trying to, you know the Christian secrets, right?
We want to keep everything secret.
Uh-huh.
Right,
so.
Right. Nothing shall be done in open, all shall be done in secret, isn't that?
We're working on a project together.
Yes. Yeah. That's it, huh?
That's it.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, so we're working on a project together, and we just got done working on a project together because as soon as the program's over, we're kicking him out of here. So he's going to be flying back to Texas where when they brought me out, that was May, wasn't it?
That was in May. Yep.
Brought me out so that I could experience my first tornado warnings and tornado watches and going to the middle of a house and hearing sirens and doing all sorts of fun stuff like that. So I really appreciate you're doing that for me.
Well, you were under the care of a different church at that time.
Oh, well, no, we had one come pretty close at your place, remember? If I recall, the person you're actually famous for, because no one knows Emilio, but you are married to Trish, so
yep.
That's your claim to fame.
She's usually sitting in seats like this.
Yes, that's your claim to fame. She and Lily were in the bathtub, okay? So that means the storm was close. Remember?
Yeah, she's always in the bathtub. She just likes to hang out in there.
No. Not with the dog like this.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we had a great, interesting time while I was there. And I also destroyed myself. I think it was the first morning I was there, wasn't it?
I think it was the first morning you were there, and it was very early.
Early for you. 11 o'clock in the morning is early for you.
I'm up at, while you're sleeping.
That's right.
I'm working. And
early to bed, early to rise is advice that you've never heard. So I got up early. I went running.
You thought you...
I got 472 meters before I discovered that Dallas roads have seams in them.
Uh-huh.
And one of those seams grabbed the front end of my left sneaker, tore it, still torn. Well, of course it's still torn today. It's not like I repaired it or something. And threw me on the ground with tremendous force. And so I come back, and I'm bleeding all over the place, and I'm trying to get this stuff cleaned up, and... You know, time's passing by. I'm going, man, they got to get up someday. I mean, you know, it's getting later and later. And, you know, so finally I'm, you know, I know what's going to happen as soon as I knock on the door is Lily's going to start barking, which, of course, she did. And so eventually Emilio comes out and he's like, you know, there's this guy, you know, bleeding all over the place.
Yeah.
And, the zombie apocalypse. Yeah, that was fun. Found out when I got back, I broke my elbow. And then we had a whole conference that day.
We did. Truth and Love Conference.
Yeah. Bandaged up the elbow as best I could. Still got a bunch of blood all over the
shirt. And you ruined your shirt from...
No, I managed to get all that blood out, thankfully.
I cleaned it up.
Yep.
Good.
Yep. But we still ended up having a good time despite the tornadoes and despite the fall. Do you remember how... I forget how many miles I rode when I was there, but I rode a fair number of miles.
Yeah, you did.
Out there going out toward that...
Panther Creek.
And that was fun. That was fun. We had a good time.
As fun as me driving by and seeing you ride. That was surreal. Watching
and
James
then we,
ride.
And then we had some interesting events there, too, such as the Leighton Flowers debate. Yes, that was that was one of the things we did while we were there.
I think the most memorable part of that debate for me was that I got to text you while you were debating. And even more important was, or more amazing, was that you responded.
Yes, crazy. I am connected, aren't I? Yes, yes, yes. Don't worry, it's on silent this time because January is here and is doing very well. Thank you for everyone. So, well, good. Now, so tell us a little about the church there, real quick.
The church is called Heritage Grace Community Church, Frisco, Texas, and our church is
that sort of north.
North Dallas area, yeah. just north of Plano. It's a growing community. I mean, it's exploding. The growth is just
Have they
amazing.
Finished that corner yet?
No, they have not.
Near the Sonic?
No, they have not.
Have they made much in the way of progress?
No, they have not.
Okay.
See, because technically, I live in, you know, we're right on the border of Frisco and Little Elm, and Frisco is a much more affluent city than Little Elm. So if we were just, you know, a few hundred yards past where we're actually at, then that road would have been fixed a long time ago. But because we're in Little Elm, you know, we kind of get treated a little bit.
That corner is not really passable, in my opinion. I mean,
we love it. I love it. We love the church. The Lord's blessing our church tremendously. And, you know, I shared with you, because you coming out there, we got a couple wonderful families that joined our church. So
that's great.
That was a tremendous blessing to know that that bore that kind of fruit. So
that's what I always want to hear. That's really good. So now you've had another conference since then. I believe you had Phil Johnson.
I can't remember
out.
Which. Oh yeah, that one.
Uh-huh. Oh yeah, that one.
Yeah, that's our annual conference. It's called the Emmaus Conference, and basically what it is, it's a conference that focuses on Christ and all of Scripture. So it's very Edmund Clowney. It's very Christ-centered. Mm-hmm. So we tackled the Book of Exodus.
Oh my.
And we just really scraped the surface, you know what I mean? So Phil Johnson did a lot of the heavy lifting. I had him teaching four times, so, you know. And then Stephen Yule was there, and I don't know if your listeners are familiar with Stephen Yule, but he's a tremendous author, he is a tremendous preacher, and he taught a couple of sessions that were really good.
Well, good.
So, yeah.
Good, excellent. And no tornadoes or anything while he was there?
No, it was perfect weather was there.
That's
yeah, Phil Johnson got perfect weather.
Good.
We know who the favor of the Lord is
no
on.
No question about that. No question about that. No. I understand. That's okay. Well, good. I know you live down there in Texas, and I know it's a tough year down there. I mean, the Cowboys have lost 7 in a row. Mm. Where are the Texans? Are they even on the map?
I don't know. I mean, I don't keep up with football, and so it's easy. It's
how can you not?
Well, you know, here's the thing. I'm not committed to
that's
team.
Like being a missionary in Saudi Arabia and not keeping up with Islam. I mean,
yeah, well, that's the thing.
This
because,
is Texas.
Because I am a missionary to the country called Texas.
Yes, yes.
I just, you know, I just jump on the bandwagon because I'm not passionate about it either way. I'm all things to all men, especially even Cowboy fans.
Okay, I got you. All right. Well, now before we go on to serious things, you are the dog whisperer.
Yeah, that's something I do on the side.
You train and as a part of that, somehow you ended up with a very interesting little puppy.
Yeah, we adopted a little pit bull named Lily.
Lily,
and she's very very introverted because she spent 3 years in a crate.
Yeah.
So when I got her, when I rescued her, she wouldn't leave the corner of a house or move. And we quite a ministry we took on there.
Yeah.
So, but she has become really a wonderful dog because she helps me train other dogs.
Mm.
And her demeanor is quite balanced in that way. She, you know, I'll leash dogs together with her and she balances them out, calms them down. They just kind of, her energy kind of rubs off on the other dog, so it's, but that's a fun part of my life.
Well, I got to know Lily a little bit. First, she wasn't so certain about me hanging around, but
I think the bow ties threw her off.
I'm sure they probably did. Did Phil do okay with Lily?
He loved her.
Okay, good.
Yeah, he loved her very much. And Phil, it was really, really into the dog whispering thing. I mean, he watches the shows.
He's all
into it. So, you know.
You'd have to be a cat whisperer for me. So that
yeah, yeah, that's right. No, I don't do that.
So, but last thing, I've got to ask you. You know, this is a theological question, but what in your eschatology results in your offering pig sacrifices at 2 o'clock in the morning? What I'm not even a premillennialist, so I'm not sure which strand of premillennialism has the offering of non kosher.
It's a Zadokian premillennialism.
A Zadokian. Okay, all right. But I was sleeping, and I started smelling bacon.
Yeah,
and so I just thought,
and
it wasn't
a bacon alarm.
No, it was not a bacon alarm, though that's a fascinating idea. I wish I had thought of it. But no, I'm starting to smell this very strong scent of bacon in my dream. And then I realized, no, I'm at Emilio's house. So it must be getting close to breakfast. And I'm starting wondering maybe I overslept because I was always up before you anyways.
Yep.
So I'm like, man, why did they get up so early to make bacon? And it just was overwhelming. I mean, it was just bacon attack, you know? And so finally I wake up and I look at the time and it's 2 o'clock in the morning. And yep. So I go stumbling out to the kitchen, and there is the remnants, the burnt offering upon the altar.
Yeah.
And so what was?
What happened was Trisha got she just got this urge, a craving for bacon. And she cooked some bacon, and she ended up cooking it just a little bit too much.
I think she said she forgot she had started.
A little bit too much, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And by that time, it was too late, and, you know, I couldn't come to the rescue. So it was a whole burnt offering.
Pork burnt offering.
I don't know how soothing it was, but...
No, it wasn't soothing to anybody. That was not a soothing offering. No, it wasn't.
Yeah, let's go. Yeah, we better move on to some more serious things before you completely shame me out of here.
That was one of the more interesting experiences that I have some great experiences when I travel.
Those are just a few. I mean, we can talk about.
Oh, there's some
we
more.
We can talk about the cash offering that you got.
Oh yeah, no, we don't want to go there. No, definitely not. So, anyway, it was a good time despite breaking my elbow and having scars all over my body now that are the worst ones that I've ever had. And Trisha's posting on my timeline on Facebook right now. I can't see what it is, but I can imagine we're getting some pictures.
Of course.
Because she took a picture of the burnt offering, didn't she?
I think she might have.
I think she did. Yeah, I'll bet you the burnt offering.
People
was just,
that are on Facebook do that kind of stuff.
That office thing is right next to where my bedroom was. Uh-huh. And the first night, all through the night, ding. Ding, ding. Every time everybody had sent anything to Trip, ding, ding, the whole night long. So Facebook is Facebook. Yes, yep. I get you. Anyway, yes, so I noticed that you had written a blog article here you told me about called Paris and the Devil's Song. Now, I did not know. Where did you get this information?
I forgot the website, but there were actual multiple sites that... That reported on it.
And this is interesting. Although several attacks reported, let's look at the attack at Bataclan Concert Hall in Paris. The concert was in full swing. The band Eagles of Death Metal, the song Kiss the Devil. And it's, I'm not going to, you know, it ends with, I will love the devil and sing his song. Mm-hmm. And this is what they were performing.
Yeah, they just started going into it, and the website actually indicated that this is actually one of the favorite songs of theirs. And,
wow.
You know, the lyrics are very juvenile. I mean, kiss
oh, they
the
are.
Devil, kiss him on the tongue. You know, just ridiculous. Like a second grader helped them out, you know, with the lyrics.
Yeah,
but that's what they were singing. I mean, that's...
Well, I have not actually read the ISIS statement, but I know that Albert Mohler read it on the briefing, and one of the things that was mentioned was the idolatry being practiced at the concert.
There you go.
And that this was part and parcel of the reasoning is, you know, people talk about the innocent people who were attacked. Now, obviously, in the West, we use the term innocent to refer to someone who has not been convicted of a specific crime by a court of law and hence is under punishment of the state or something like that. Or we'll use it morally or ethically for a child, an infant child, or something along those lines. But theologically, Christians should, first and foremost, recognize that the term innocent is only applicable to one person, and that was Jesus.
Right.
And yet, I think it is indicative of how deeply influenced we are by the culture around us that we can pick up on these terms and use them in a way that is actually inconsistent with our actual professed worldview. But is it really our worldview if it does not impact how we think about events in the world? I think there are many, many professed Christians who have one worldview while sitting in church and a completely different worldview. Well, I don't think you can have more than one worldview. They have one worldview. They have a religious veneer at a certain point in time, whether it's sitting in church. Yeah. And so you sort of try to interpret things in a more religious way at certain points in time. And then when you're not in that context, then you don't have that kind of religious veneer, and you pretty much just think like the world around you. Now, what happened was, what I want to talk about today, and I'll tell Rich, you've got someone on Twitter you need to respond to, because they're, what, 6 months, 8 months behind now, because they're saying, how come podcast catchers aren't catching Dividing Line anymore? So in other words, someone's got a 8-month-old URL or something like that, because we've been doing sermon audio now for how long it's been? 8-9 months? May? Okay, all right. Well, around there. Anyway, I was troubled by what I was watching. You know, everybody went wall to wall, Fox News, et cetera, on Friday night. It started happening while I was actually doing the Dividing Line, but I guess some people wanted me to become a Shepard Smith or something like that and, you know, go news stuff. Even as I sat that night watching the news, I knew that the majority of what they were saying the next day wasn't probably going to be accurate. Yeah. You know, the death toll was going to change and and all that. It's just speculation after speculation after speculation. And there wasn't any reason to do any more speculating, especially sitting here on the Dividing Line. So I'm watching it that evening, and I'm consciously trying to listen to the coverage and to interpret it as a Christian, as a person considering the Lordship of Christ, issues of sin and judgment and the sovereign decree of God, and also as a person who just did a debate in South Africa, tried to do a debate in South Africa on the subject of war, violence, and peace in Christianity and Islam. And over the next couple days, you know, I see people putting the tricolors on their avatars, and, you know, I start seeing the Pray for France thing. And other horrific acts take place during this time in Africa. This kind of thing happens almost every day in Syria, Iraq, places like that. The media doesn't cover it because it's a different culture. But this is Paris, for crying out loud. This is the Eiffel Tower. This is Gucci. This is whatever. And all of a sudden there is this, in my opinion, massive overreaction because of location and nationality, rather than who's actually dying, why, purposes, so on and so forth. And so I'm trying to watch all this stuff, and I'm trying to filter this through the fact that what I'm seeing from many self-professed Christians is either a full-on emotional response. Now, a lot of people, I've had people say, you bet. God made us emotional creatures, so I'm going to respond emotionally. Hmm. All right. But the problem is we're attempting to consistently apply biblical principles to understanding what the purposes of God would be in bringing such things about. Now, if you don't believe God has a sovereign decree and he's just sort of sitting up there in heaven, you know, doing the best he can to sort of respond to things, mm-hmm. Then you're going to view things differently. But if you believe that God has a purpose in all these things, we're supposed to be thinking with the mind of Christ, and we're supposed to be applying biblical principles and doing so consistently to the glory of God. And I think Greek terms like sophronismos, paiduo has semantic connections, discipline, self-control. These are things I see. And what would self-control be if it's not self-control including emotion? I mean, I do not believe that a mature Christian should be a person that is controlled by their emotions. We should have our emotions constantly under control. And that makes me heartless, unloving, unkind, unfeeling, all the rest of that kind of stuff. I actually would argue just the opposite, that if you have your emotions under control, you're going to best be able to serve others, you're going to best be able to do what's right and best for them, and that is a deeper form of love than to be constantly ruled by your emotions and end up doing things that end up hurting other people. So that's my apologetic for being Scottish, I guess you might say. But I was from the beginning trying to avoid falling into that trap of, look, when you think of some people in a crowded theater tossing grenades and sitting there with an AK-47 at that range, there is, you know, the first thought in my mind is the absolute cowardice of those men, because they know they can do anything they want there, and they're just, the level of evil is difficult to begin to comprehend. But then another thought crossed my mind. It has nothing to do with theology. It has to do with politics and culture. And that is, man, what if there were just a few people in there that could fight back? I am not one who believes the Bible teaches that we as Christians are to be sheep to the slaughter. In that context, in self-giving the service of Christ, called to give you bet. But in the context of someone, if I see someone sitting in a balcony with a firearm shooting people indiscriminately right and left, and I'm armed, I think I have a moral duty to demonstrate that I'm a pretty good shot and take that person out. I think that I have an absolute moral duty to do that. And some people would argue that I don't. I think John Piper would argue that I don't. I'm a believer. He's an unbeliever. I should be willing to go to heaven because he's going to go to hell. Mm-hmm. I don't see that in Jesus' teaching. He talked about the, if the house owner had known the thief was coming, then he would have kept the thief from coming. Well, how are you going to do that? He told the apostles to, you know, they were going to be walking along roads that are unsafe. They were to take care of themselves. It's not, I don't believe it's a biblical Christian thing to expose yourself and to risk your life. I think the commandment to thou shalt not kill includes thou shalt protect life. And if I have the ability to do that, then I need to be doing that. And in this situation, it is an amazing thing that they could, with impunity, and there were only like, what, 7 to 9 people involved in these attacks? And look at the number of people they killed.
Yeah,
that wouldn't happen in Texas.
Yeah, that's the kind of first thing I told my wife.
Yeah, that would not happen in Texas. No. In fact, I was at your house when those guys tried to get into that Draw Muhammad cartoon thing.
The Garland event. One of which actually lived pretty close to you.
That's right. That's right. One of the guys that went to Texas just lived just up the road from me here in Phoenix. Amazing. So They wouldn't get away with that in most places. Well, they would on the East Coast and the Left Coast. You bet, but not in Texas, not in Arizona. There would have been people firing back, and a lot fewer people would have died as a result.
That's right.
But that culture has been completely disarmed, so they are totally at the mercy of the state at that point, and the state's only got so many people. And can only move so fast. So, you know, what can I say? Anyway, I started thinking about all this because, again, I started seeing things on Twitter and Facebook. The bloodlust of certain people. Let's just go, well... Yesterday, someone once again, I cannot believe this, someone once again posted Bob Morey's nuke Mecca idea. I'm serious. They posted Bob Morey's nuke Mecca idea. We just need to turn Mecca into glass and Islam will be over with because then they can't do the five pillars. And I'm just like, oh my goodness, there is absolutely, positively nothing I could ever imagine that would solidify the world's Muslims more than nuking Mecca.
Yeah.
I mean, you want to change a 5% jihadi population to a 95% jihadi population, that's what you do. And you go, well, I'll destroy the faith. They can't do that. They already can't do Hajj right now. Did you know that? Right now, they've run the numbers. Given the number of people that Saudi Arabia allows in to do Hajj each year, there are more Muslims in the world than could ever fulfill the fifth pillar of Islam right now. It's mathematically impossible to fulfill that fifth pillar. So I've always said what they're going to do is they're going to develop the concept of a Hajj of desire, just like baptism of desire. And so as long as you would really to do that, then that'll be considered actually fulfilling it. Wow. You should still try to, you know, the lottery and so on and so forth. But if Allah does not allow you to do so, as long as you desire, and that's it. That's all they need to do. And the idea of destroying that black stone or whatever, destroying the religion of Islam, is the dumbest thing anyone has ever suggested. There's just no question about it. I saw people posting that on my timeline. And I'm just like, no. And so I'm approaching this from a unique perspective. It shouldn't be unique. But I'm approaching this from recognition that if I speak up on this, the emotions right now, and the only reason I'm being forced to do this now, I was still going to let a couple weeks pass, but I was informed today about an article that appeared, of all places, on Pathos. Anything that appears on Pathos, you might as well ignore it. But the article appeared on Pathos, and our Lutheran friend... posted this in regard, and the title that was given here was "How Christians Should Not Respond to the Paris Attacks." So our Lutheran friend, Brother Cooper, posted this, and so this is why I'm responding to this. This past week has been a very difficult one for people throughout the world. Nearly 150 Christian students were killed in Kenya, and around the same number of innocent people were killed in France due to attacks from radical Muslim terrorists. And again, I would question the term innocent. Since these attacks, I have seen a number of different Christian responses. Many have been overcome with anger and fear. I confess that I felt the same anger after these attacks. But there was one particular response that I saw shared around social media, which was particularly disturbing and I think is worth a response. And then he quotes me. "I am keeping my mouth shut about Paris and pray for Paris and all the emotions and red, white, and blue flags and icons and all that stuff. Have to. See, I would like to discuss the issue from a Christian worldview perspective, a worldview that takes into consideration judgment and sin and all sorts of things like that. Well, folks wrapped up in emotion tend to dismiss or forget about all that. So I'll wait a while. In our day, it takes, what, a week or so before folks move on to something else and emotions die down? Then maybe we can have a meaningful conversation about responding to such events in a consistently biblical fashion." So what am I saying? I'm not going to comment on this yet. And one of the reasons I'm not going to comment on this is because of the emotions that this fellow admits he himself had. That he admits, I felt that fear, I felt that anger, I experienced it. This is Jordan Cooper, by the way. I'm sorry. I just said Mr. Cooper, but it's Jordan Cooper. And this is called Just and Sinner is the blog on Pathios. If you want to wander over to Pathios, if you can survive wandering over to Pathios. But anyway, so after I had posted that, someone on Twitter had sent me what somebody else had said. That's ridiculous. Does that man think he's a prophet? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I'm going, wait a minute. My article said I'm not commenting on this right now. So if you say I'm not commenting, you're commenting. Nobody took up what I actually said, and it is, man, there's a lot of emotion here. I didn't have anybody defend the idea that, you know what, and Christians should just be a jumble of emotions. No, they didn't defend that, though I think most of them fell into that. But I did mention one thing. I said, till I comment, this cartoon from Joanne Sfar, a former Charlie Hebdo cartoonist, reminds us of the fact that French society, by and large, has no interest in God, God's ways, God's laws, God's will, and, well, God in general. I want to consider that after all the emotions have died down, that is. That's all I said. And then the cartoon was all over the place. And it was the cartoon where she basically said, we appreciate the Pray for Paris hashtag, but we don't need more religion. Paris is about love and joy and kisses and wine and celebration and blah, 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 blah. And it was your just standard, in your face, keep your religion to yourself, this is a secular society response. Now, evidently, Mr. Cooper can read my mind. This is an amazing thing, because not only can he figure out what I'm saying from this before I actually say it, but he can even criticize me for saying it too soon after the event, even though I didn't actually say anything. That was the amazing part, was that part of his problem is, this was right afterwards. How there are people still hurting. How can you? And I'm like, you know, I didn't ask for someone to give me an illustration of hyper-emotionalism, but if you want to provide one, you know, I guess, you know, and do it on Pathios, there you go. But I sort of feel like I've been forced to do this earlier than I wanted to, because I keep running into people who are saying, well, you said this, and I just think it's terrible that you think this. And it's like, okay, all right, at least let me actually say something so that when you're disagreeing with me, you can, well, I just realized I was about to say you can disagree with what I actually said, but folks like this aren't going to be disagreeing with what I actually said anyway. So I guess it doesn't matter one way or the other. Anyway, and if you disagree, you go ahead and let me know. We'll have a nice discussion about it right here on the program.
It was actually your Charlie Hebdo post that, you know, that picture that you posted, that kind of contributed to me writing my article too, because I think it was a valid point that we needed to point that out to people, that, you know, all of this sympathy that we are lavishing on France, and rightly so, I mean, weeping with those that weep, you know, but I think the thing with Jesus is that we have to watch the way he wept, right? I mean, he, like you were saying, I mean, Jesus, obviously a man of perfect self-control, wept very strategically, I guess we can say.
Right.
It wasn't just for emotionalism's sake.
Right.
If you look at John chapter 11, he wasn't weeping along with the mourners at Lazarus's tomb. His tears were much more profound. So I think that is where the biblical worldview really comes in. And I think what you were, I know what you're going to try to do with this, and eventually, and then why you had to put something out saying you'll talk about it later. But in my article, I tried to do a little bit of that. And that is, you know, interpreting things from a biblical worldview actually sees beneath the surface of the initial reaction of everybody and really informs the world as to what has actually transpired in France. And which is just really wave upon wave of evil, where you have people, you know, reveling in evil and then being murdered in the most evil way. But it isn't as if these are a bunch of saints, you know,
right,
gathering together for a choir service, and they were slaughtered by, you know, by these terrorists. They were slaughtered, and it was unjust, and it was evil.
And those men will be judged for what
absolutely,
they did.
Absolutely.
But here's where theology matters. I think Mr. Cooper, because of his theology, may not agree with this. But just as Assyria was judged for okay, something I'm making a serious point. What did I just say? Just as Syria was judged, right? You know what happened? As Syria was judged, Siri popped up on my iPhone. Siri's like, "What can I help you with?"
Tell Siri not to judge.
Yeah, Siri, don't judge. Okay, whatever. All right. She probably already knows that. Probably has that programmed in. That's funny. But as in Isaiah chapter 10, when God brings Assyria against Israel, he says that they're the axe in his hand. They are the means by which he is judging an ungodly people. And then, having justly judged an ungodly people, people of Israel, in perfect accordance with his holy law, in perfect accordance with Deuteronomy 28 and 29, blessings and cursings, etc., etc. And man, those are tough chapters to read. Oh, yeah. I just read them recently from the pulpit as part of our regular readings of the Old Testament. And man, really hard. Just judgment, and we're talking the Assyrians, ISIS, she did it again. ISIS doesn't even know how to pretend to be like the Assyrians were, because they were absolutely brutal beyond description. I mean, an AK-47 and a hand grenade is merciful in comparison.
It's a humane way to die.
It's a humane way to die
in comparison. Compared to what the Assyrians would give you.
Very, very much so. So they bring this slaughter, and then God judges them for the attitude of their heart. Now, a lot of theologies aren't big enough to handle that, which is why they end up throwing so much of the Old Testament out, and this is just how the Israelites thought about God and that kind of thing, and blah, 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 blah. But I take that very, very seriously. I think that is how we are to understand these things. And so I start with I think as a Christian that we should be very careful with that word innocence. Non-combatants, et cetera, that's fine. But we need to recognize that Romans chapter 1 says God's wrath is being revealed, present tense, against all the unrighteousness and ungodliness of men. That does not mean I have the ability to look at a tsunami or an earthquake and go, that particular earthquake was brought on by this particular thing. Because if that were the case, then San Andreas would have to be a Christian movie because it wiped out San Francisco, okay? Just completely, and you go, aha, see? San Francisco, wipe out, there you go.
Yeah.
That I can't see that. But what I can confess is that in this world, God brings his just judgment to bear. And that there is, that as Christians, we are missing a very important element of God's kingship over his universe when we buy into the thinking that there are quote-unquote purposeless tragedies and events that were beyond God's control and that do not have any purpose in God's governance over his universe. There's a lot of folks, their theology isn't big enough for that. It's just a fallen world, bad things happen in a fallen world. Well, I'm not saying that I know the exact purposes and how judgment was brought about in each one of these situations. But I do know Mr. Cooper, for example, complains, because I mentioned judgment, complains that, well, there are Christians in France. Well, of course there are Christians in France. There are Christians everywhere.
Yeah.
But they're a tiny, tiny, tiny minority. That doesn't matter. There were true believers in Yahweh who died when the Assyrians, if you lay siege to a city, true believers and non-believers both starve to death at pretty much the same rate.
Right.
Okay? That's just how it works. And so this idea that, Well, there are churches. He mentions that he had relatives there, and so he's very emotional. You can't argue with emotion, you know. And as long as he's admitted, this is I'm being emotional. Okay, fine. I'm not going to be. I could be. It's not that I don't have emotions. I just believe that it's important to keep them under control so that you can avoid ending up starring on TVN. Second thing is, I cannot see how any Christian could analyze an event like this without asking the question of the cultural and national theology, because every nation has a theology, of the nation that experiences this. Now, in many places, in places like Africa, the nation is so weak and so nebulous almost that you really can't even ask the question, to be honest with you. There really isn't. You're starting to talk about tribal religion and mm-hmm. stuff like that. But we're talking about the French Revolution here. We're talking about France and its prideful rejection of the necessity of submission to any deity whatsoever.
Yeah.
Their idea is exactly what the left in our society wants, and that is, you're free to have any religion you want. You just keep it inside your church, inside your head, and inside your home. It has no place outside of those things. Your life cannot reflect it. You cannot live in light of it. It's can only exist up here. It's Psalm 12:4 all over again. Who is Lord over us? All right. So when people are putting up, you know, the Eiffel Tower and all the rest of stuff, I'm just sitting here going, why again are we doing this? I mean, as long as if all you're saying is, I think it's terrible that non-combatants were slaughtered in a horrible way. Great. Yeah. But if what you're saying is there is something special about this place, well, what was special about it? Other than the fact that to the Muslim mind, it represents the very depth of the decadence yeah. of Western culture, which they identify with Christianity. They identify that with what they call them? Crusaders. The Crusaders died. Now, that's foolishness on the Muslims' part.
Right.
But at the same time, how can you seriously suggest that any mature Christian analysis of this, and I guess that's the key, it's supposed to be mature, hence based upon biblical revelation, reasoning, logic, not emotion, but how can you say any mature Christian reflection upon this is to ignore the rampant abortion, the rampant sexual immorality, the absolute rejection that there is a law of God that is to give light and guidance to how mankind is to live. It's there. And if you ignore it, I don't think you're giving a Christian analysis of
exactly.
what's taking place at all.
Exactly.
In any way, shape, or form. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I think the other thing, too, that we have to pick up on is the hypocrisy of the response that we've heard so far, that, you know, an event like this, as horrible as it is no more horrible than what has been already going on in Syria and Iraq for months and months and months and months and months, with the killing of thousands, the rape of 8-year-old Yazidi girls, and yet nobody puts up a hashtag for Yazidi girl or puts up their, you know, or changes their Facebook, you know, profile or whatever, you know. And so I think
but we go to soccer games and we go to rock concerts and they look like us,
but
they carry iPhones like us.
But that's right. And this is where the Christian voice has to distinguish itself mm-hmm. from the world. If we just sound exactly like what Fox News is doing, what are we really saying? And how are we being salt and light? We're not. You know, what we should be talking about is the deeper worldview issue, that that this is the spirit of the age that we're witnessing here, that this is, you know, this is all of this is a result of sin. And the deeper, issues of the human heart, total depravity.
And the fact that I'm deeply concerned by the fact that so many Christians have been, as a result of their giving into emotion, willing to allow that emotion to change to hatred so as to support the indiscriminate murder of untold thousands of Syrians and Iraqis. Okay, ISIS may be in Raqqa, but there are other people in Raqqa too.
Yeah.
That are not supportive of ISIS. They have been taken over by these people. They don't want to be a part of this stuff. And they're dying in far greater numbers now than anyone who died in Paris. What I'm seeing that really concerns me are Christians who are giving in to hatred toward all Muslims. The argument is, these are the real Muslims, and any Muslim who tells you, I don't support what ISIS is doing, is deceiving you and lying to you. This is what is really, really concerning me.
Yeah, we have to resist giving in to the temptation to substitute Christ-likeness for some sort of politically charged response to something.
Or even militarism.
Or militant response to something, you know, where Christ would say, you know, that you love your enemy. It's so easy for us to listen to popular conservative voices telling us that the answer to this is we need a new president. Well, we might, but more than anything, we need a move of God.
Big time.
It's the only that's the only answer, ultimately.
No question about that. But let me address this, because this is where I think a lot of folks, I'm really, really troubled, and man, we only have like 11 minutes left. What I'm hearing from so many of the people in social media, on television, everything else, is that ISIS represents the real Islam, and any other view is a fake Islam. You're hearing that all the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm hearing that from Christians who minister to Muslims. Here's the problem. On one side, you have the quote-unquote progressives, also known as communists, who say, oh, this has nothing to do with Islam, and Islam is a religion of peace, and la, 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 la. On the other side, you have people saying, this is the real Islam, and any Muslim who doesn't do this is not a true Muslim. Both of them share the same black and white mindset that cannot function in this world. And that is, everything's got to be either this or that. There's nothing in between. And the reality is, the ISIS Muslims, many of them, I don't know what percentage because no one can do a meaningful poll or something, but many of them believe themselves to be Orthodox, practicing Muslims, doing their best to follow the example of their prophet as they understand it. There are those there. Now, there are also amongst them simply men who love evil. They love to rape, they love to maim, they love to kill, and they are more than willing to do all the religious stuff that allows them to do those things. Okay, so what's the percentage? I don't know. But the fact of the matter is, ISIS has its theologians. ISIS has its people who are going to have their doctoral degrees and be able to make their arguments from the literature from the hadith, from and so on and so forth. They're going to be able to make their arguments. There are this is an Islamic problem. On the other side, I hear the Muslims who are saying they are wrong. Here's why they're wrong. Here's what they're ignoring. And I want to encourage them to engage in debate with the other side on this issue. But as I have said over and over and over again, I don't think that the sources that the two of these sides would agree upon or authoritative are clear enough and consistent enough to solve the debate between these two sides. But what I'm concerned about is there are many Christians who want to deny that there are any Muslims over here at all.
Mm-hmm.
They want to deny that, you know, I just got this.
Yep.
I just got this today. I had seen this ordered, and I got it on, it's called The Study Quran, a new translation and commentary. Nasser, Dagli, Dakake, Lombard, and Rustum, I believe, are the editors.
Is that the ESV of the Quran?
Maybe. It's a whole new translation, large enough print to actually read.
Right.
And
substantial
more
footnotes.
Yeah. Than the ESV Study Bible has. Really does. It has more footnotes than the ESV Study Bible has.
And the language,
I mean, look at that.
The language is actually pretty good.
The translation's good. The translation, I have not spent enough time with it to say, wow, this is really good. This is a new standard we can use or something like that. I'm going to have to spend some time with it. But these obviously do not represent the ISIS range of people. So are we to say that these people are actually hiding AK-47s behind their back, just waiting for the opportunity to shoot us? Or are we to recognize that their theology is different than those on the other side? We want to force Islam to be a monolithic, all on the same page. They do that to us. They always hold me accountable for what the Pope says. Excuse me! I don't want to be held accountable for what the Pope says. Me and the Pope are on completely different pages. I believe the Pope has a false gospel, etc., etc., etc. But they broad brush us. And we turn around and we broad brush them too. Mm-hmm. And as a result, it seems to me that there's more than one Christian on social media that would not have any problem whatsoever with the indiscriminate carpet bombing of all Muslim populations.
Yeah.
We're supposed to be called to minister the gospel to these folks, not carpet bomb them. And if you don't recognize the difference between these groups and what they're willing to do and what they believe and the spectrum in between, how are you any different than from the jihadis who likewise refuse to make any distinction between us and what we believe? It does not make any sense to me, and it frightens me greatly. And it makes me wonder if how any of these people who are adopting this attitude could actually be seriously praying for an opportunity to actually invest themselves in witnessing to one of these Muslims. I mean, if you have this idea that all Muslims are exactly like this, there is no way that you are going to be taking any time at all to be witnessing to that person. One other area, just really quickly. All of a sudden, what was it, Trump? Was it Trump that said that he would think about closing all the mosques? Mm. Yeah, I read it yesterday. That he was talking about, you know, it may come to that. We may have to just close all the mosques. Folks, I saw people going, ooh, that's a great idea. Let's close all the mosques. Excuse me. That's the same government that is telling us that we need to have transgendered people on our staffs and transgendered bathrooms and can't say anything about abortion and need to be doing gay marriages and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. Any power you give to a secular government like ours is going to be used against you
eventually.
It's going to be used against you. And it frightens me that there are so many people that just get so up in their emotions and so up in their Islamophobia. I'm going to go ahead and use it, because if you don't make distinctions, then that is a phobia. Okay? I don't like the term anymore. I like homophobia. But if you refuse to think clearly and refuse to make distinctions in looking at people groups, that's a phobia. That's not thinking rationally. If you're going to get all caught up in that, hey, when they come after you and they come after your church, don't complain, because you're the one going, oh, yeah, I think the state should be able to do things like this. Oh, but we should only do it about Muslims because they want to blow everybody up. You don't, there is a, I was going to get to this. I may spend some more time on it, but there was an article. Did y'all see this article on, where was this posted? I think it was HuffPo. Yes, on HuffPo. Arrest Pastor Kevin Swanson. This is a homosexual making the argument that an Orthodox Presbyterian Church pastor should be arrested under except where such advocacy is directed to inciting or producing imminent lawless action and is likely to incite or produce such an action. So they're wanting to use that, you know, can't cry a fire in a crowded theater thing to say that if you say what Kevin Swanson says about homosexuality, you're inciting to violence and lawless action, and therefore you should be arrested and put in prison.
Yeah, because a hate crime doesn't have to be violent. And if you can accuse a Muslim of a hate crime, you can accuse a Christian of a hate
exactly.
crime.
Exactly.
The difference becomes arbitrary.
And people don't, and just people are just glibly, gladly going along saying, well, you know, hey, as long as it's the Muslims, as long as it's not us. What's the basis of that supposed to be?
I think part of the reason that people are so afraid is because of the fact that you can't really distinguish anymore between, you know, who are the nominal Muslims who will never engage in a violent act their entire lives, and who, you know, who are the Muslims that will. I mean, if you look at the faces of the people that went into Paris and did this, I mean, you're looking at teenagers.
You can't tell from the outside. You can't tell from the outside.
The difference, and so the natural reaction is just to say, well, get rid of all of them indiscriminately. Right. It doesn't matter, you know, eradicate the problem, even if you end up harming, you know, completely law-abiding Muslims, which is a very difficult thing to do. Just a reminder that, I mean, we're living in the present evil age. There's no solution to all of these problems except the one that we know of.
No, exactly. The only solution that really does exist is well, we have a weapon of mass instruction.
That's right.
And that's what the Muslims need.
That's what the gospel's all about.
They need the gospel, and but I remain very, very concerned at how ready many professing Christians are to jump on the nuke 'em all, let God sort them out later bandwagon.
It is a difficult balance. I mean, if you go to Red Grace Media, I've written tons of articles on Islam, and it's hard to walk that fine balance between not condemning all Muslims, but at the same time speaking the truth about what Islam teaches for all Muslims.
It's a little bit easier for me since I know, I debate, I engage with these folks. I would love to engage someone who would defend ISIS.
Yeah.
But ISIS doesn't do debates. ISIS does violence.
You think part of it, too, though, is because there's just not enough Muslims that are condemning ISIS in force?
No, they are. I immediately wrote to a Muslim friend of mine, and he immediately linked me to a condemnation of ISIS and the Paris attacks and things like that. They are. They just don't get any media. They don't get any
right.
press. Fox News isn't going to pick it up, and unfortunately, most of my Christian friends aren't either. And if you dare mention it, then you'll be attacked. You'll be attacked for being a compromiser and so on.
Or they could just say that those Muslims are engaging in taqiyya.
That's the other easy way around it. That's the other easy way around it, is just accuse them all of dishonesty. So,
yeah,
when it's done to us, it's easy how we recognize it. When we do it to others, it's amazing how it changes. Anyways, you, brother, have a flight to catch. And
I do.
We are pretty much wrapping up the program today. Thanks for coming out. Thanks for
Thank you
being
very
with
much.
For
thank you
hour.
For all you do, brother. I thank you on behalf of a lot of people, you know, that not only that I know, but just, you know, you do a lot of good for a lot of people, and you've been ministering to me for many, many years, and I know you hate all this kind of stuff.
I've got to hurry up here, Emilio, because my teeth are about to fall
out.
You
got to sit there and take it, brother, but I thank you, because it's almost surreal for me to be sitting here, to be honest with you. I mean, I read your
Well, you were a little nervous that I was going to, like, do a role play or something with you. That would have been fun. I would have had so much fun.
My wife would have loved if we did something like that, but no, that's okay.
She would have loved it. Yeah, she's going to be disappointed. I was way too kind to you.
Being able to sit here and say that I was on the dividing line. I mean, how many?
We'll be back. I know Tom Buck's trying to drag me back to that.
Yeah, we
got to
do something.
We got some stuff in the works.
Yeah.
We'll be back, and I will try to avoid falling flat on my face. Or I'll have you follow me in the truck and videotape it, because that would absolutely go viral on YouTube. That would just
friend
be awesome.
Friend and foe alike.
Yeah, you know, that's exactly right. That'd be great. So, hey, thanks for listening to The Dividing Line today. Lord willing, we'll be back sometime. I don't know when, because I'm busy this weekend, but we may sneak another program in. If not, we'll see you next week. God bless.